Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, January 26th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 401. I have a super special guest, actor, writer, producer, David A. Gregory, from the brand new film Dirty Sexy Saint, available exclusively on PassionFlix. So, I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I am sitting on my couch recording this intro. I've got the 2020 NFL Pro Bowl Skills Challenge. Skills Showdown is what they're calling it on the TV guide. And that's pretty interesting and fun. I'm excited about the Super Bowl. Most of you know why. It's because Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs are facing the San Francisco 49ers, and you know who I am rooting for. I'm going to be nervous on Sunday, probably. I haven't decided what I'm going to be making on Sunday. What am I going to be dining on? I'm not sure. Is it going to be some wings, some pizza? I don't know. I'm not sure. Not sure what I'm going to be doing, but I know I'm going to be into it. I'm excited about it. You know, before I started recording this, I'm watching the ESPN, and I see this Enterprise commercial. It's Enterprise car sales commercial with Kristen Bell in it, star of Veronica Mars in The Good Place, and theater actress, very, very successful actor. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, Kristen Bell, there's no way that you're buying a used car unless you just, I don't know. You know what? I haven't even thought of the scenario to even think that Kristen Bell would be, you know, getting an Enterprise car, you know, unless she's renting one, but not buying one. I have to do that. You know, not you, Kristen. You are too successful. I like your husband. Your husband's successful. He's a working actor. He's got a good podcast. But get your money, Kristen. Get your money. I get it. Support your family. I get it, you know. So it goes. But I love you, Kristen. I love your work, and you're really talented. That just was weird for me. So this past week was good. TPS reports by day. Got to do some comedy. Last night I had a show at the Laugh It Up Comedy Club in Poughkeepsie, New York. Friday I got the call that somebody dropped out and they chose me to fill in, and it was fucking awesome. It was really cool. I closed out the show. Shout out to Cal from Laugh It Up Poughkeepsie. I had a great fucking time. That's one of the coolest moments in my career so far. Get into headlines, somebody dropped out, I filled in and did my fucking job. I did like close to 50 minutes, and still had more in the tank, but I wanted to be a good comic and get off stage on time. And then afterwards, like, oh, you could have went on longer. You know, some guys, you know, if they're having a good time, we'll have to do a longer set. I was like, no, I want to come back. I don't want to Carlos Mencia my stage time. Carlos Mencia is known to do like 3 hours for no fucking reason. But it was good to know that I still had some left in the tank, and that I had did some new bits that I was working on, and some of them that I've been working on for a long time actually kind of came into fruition. So I got to listen back to the tape and figure out what the fuck I did to make it happen and make it work. So that was a lot of fun. And even some bits, some established bits, some new stuff came out of that. And it was fucking great. I had a blast. Food's good there too. After my set, I had to, had a steak quesadilla and a salad, and that was good. And I came home and fell asleep watching the latest episode of Power, and I woke up and actually rewatched it, and it was fucking great. Part of me was like, you know, what the fuck are they doing? They're breaking the season up, and it's like, what's going on here? But this latest episode, I want to say 14, the latest episode is like, they really hit a stride. And I shout out to the homie, Damian Lemon. I always text him, like, yo, did you watch Power yet? And he responded later, I just finished. He's like, they're on a run. And they really are. So I'm hoping that they close strong if this is the final episode that comes out next week. So I was really, I really enjoyed that. What else? Other things. Let me just give you a quick movie review and we'll get you to David. Before that, I'm going to be, if you get this, this is going to be uploaded today on Sunday. I'm going to be, if you're in New York City, I'm going to be at If You Build It, doing the If You Build It comedy show at UCB at Subculture on Bleecker Street tonight at 9:30. And I'm going to be at Levity Live in West Nyack, New York on Thursday, Thursday, January 30th. And I'm going to next weekend after that, the 9th, February 9th through the 14th, I'm going to be at the Borgata in Atlantic City. It's always a good time. I'm going to be there with Joe DeVito and Mike Vecchione. So that's going to be a really good show. So come to that if you're in Atlantic City in a couple weeks. Super excited about that. If anything else comes up, I will tweet about it and let you know. Friday, I was going to see that movie, The Gentlemen, but I figured I would probably just wait until this Thursday to watch it before my show at Levity Live, because as you know, Levity Live's in a mall and I like to go. I'm not going to go all the way home and come all the way back up. That just doesn't make any sense. So I'm probably going to see The Gentleman on Thursday. But I went to go see Like a Boss with Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne. I'll read you the blurb for this. Best friends Mia and Mel run their own cosmetics company, a business they built from the ground up, but they're also in over their heads financially, and the prospect of a buyout offer from an industry titan proves to be too tempting to pass up. The beauty business is now about to get ugly as the proposal puts Mia and Mel's lifelong friendship to the ultimate test. Now, this movie has a 4.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 65% Fandango rating, and 21% on Rotten Tomatoes. And Rotten Tomatoes, I think you guys got it wrong. I really enjoyed this movie. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, like, I like Tiffany Haddish, and I love Rose Byrne, and I fucking enjoyed this movie. It may have been 21% for Rotten Tomatoes, but it was 92% in my heart. The other 8% is, I like this movie. I fucking enjoyed it. It was fun. It was sweet. I laughed quite a few times. Billy Porter was really funny. I kind of wish that they didn't show the scene. I guess you kind of had to show it, but I didn't like that they showed the scene that he was, his major scene in the trailer, because I was like, fuck, man. You should have just let that cook. But it was still funny, but it was just like not the same as it would have been if the movie was just, if you didn't fucking show that scene. But they just have to give everything up in the trailer because they're scared. I don't know. It's fucking hard. I don't know. But it was good. Really good supporting cast. Billy Porter, I just mentioned. Salma Hayek, Jennifer Coolidge. Really fun movie. So it's one of those movies, you know, it's kind of like it's January and we're getting Super Bowl weekend coming up, and it's kind of a dumping ground for a lot of these movies. January and February are like that. But, you know, I've talked about that before, but it's still some good shit out there. So if you're just looking for something that's pleasant and fun and light, nobody's getting their head blown off, you know, go see Like a Boss. I really enjoyed it. Way better than I thought it was going to be. I was talking to a coworker about that, and I got to tell her that I really enjoyed it. And it kind of gave me a kick, because there was, at first when I got in there, it was me and two other women that were, we almost thought it was just going to be a movie just for us. But then certain people filtered in a little later, but it kind of gave me a kick that there were these two women that were a couple seats away from me. And it looked like they were just having a fucking blast. And then them having a good time. They were like laughing during the trailers and shit. I don't know if they were drunk or not, but they just kind of made me feel good. And like, part of me wondered, like, why are you so fucking happy? How do you do it? How do you? No, but they made the movie better. Sometimes when if you're in a crowd, if you're in an audience that, you know, they can enhance it too. Like, you know, I think I told you about that time. What was that black movie I saw? Was it Traffic? I think it was that movie Traffic with Paula Patton. Oh, excuse me. And Omar Epps. Just like a really fun. And it was just like a handful of people. It was less than 10 people. Maybe around that. It was just fun. So Like a Boss, I recommend it. Is it something that you got to run out and see right away? No. But it's something that you could rent if you waited, if you wanted to wait. But if you just want to get away and go to the movies, I definitely felt like I needed to go to the movies. Even though we got MLK off, I think I just did like a lot of driving last week, the past few weeks. Yeah. And I was just like, I'm seeing a movie on Friday after work. It's my favorite thing to do right after work. And I just fucking enjoyed it. I had a good time. Yeah, so I recommend that. Let's get you to David A. Gregory. So David, I met on the set of Dirty Sexy Saint. I filmed it. I did a day on the film last summer or fall of 2019. And he was just a really cool guy. And I saw him again at the premiere. And I said, hey, man, you got to come on my podcast. And he obliged. And I went to his place and shot the shit with him for a bit, and it was fucking awesome. He's a sweet guy. And some of this, you know, some, if you're a listener that if you've been with the show for a long time, there's some stories, there's actually maybe one story that's pretty new in a way where I reveal some things. But since David and I didn't know each other super well, you might hear some old stories or something that I talk about, but it's still a good conversation, so don't cancel me for retelling some of the same stories. But David was a fucking delight, and yeah, he was great. I could talk to him for hours, but I'll probably have to have him back on if he wants to come back, so we can trade more actor war stories. But I think we had a good convo here, and I'm gonna share that with you right now. So please enjoy my conversation with the great David A. Gregory.
Sure, you got it.
So I'm really appreciating these theater sippy cups.
Well, long story short is my fiance made her Broadway debut in 2012, and when her parents from Ohio came in, they had to collect them. It's neither of these two glasses, but
okay.
But it became a thing in our house, like a running joke of whenever we'd go to some show, I'll go pick one up from Lehman Trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
And just because, you know, you never know. They're always useful,
right?
Especially for a situation like this. We don't want to.
This is amazing, though. I love it because I always see people with these when I go to plays.
Yeah, man.
So I'm excited to drink from one of these. I have I got tipsy at Tootsie.
Tipsy at Tootsie. That's cute. That's a cute.
It is the alliteration. You know, you can't be mad.
I can't imagine what it'll be for your show to be. I lost a lot of money.
I lost a lot of money coming to this fucking ticket. Show. So because you mentioned it, I have to announce it in the intro. But that's fine. Nobody cares. I haven't announced it yet.
Look, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to keep something close to your chest.
Yeah.
So we can revamp that opening.
No,
if you need
that's fine. But we don't have to.
I am happy for you, and I think it's...
Thanks, man.
I mean, it's already the talk of the town, and it hasn't opened on Broadway yet.
Already? See, you. Yeah. I feel like you're more in the know than I am.
Well, I had friends that saw it, I think, when it was at Park Avenue Armory.
Okay, yeah.
And they were like, if you buy one ticket this season, this is the one.
Yeah.
And... I mean, especially when we're in this time, we got great theater going on, and people are talking about everything. Mm-hmm. And when there's something so unanimously praised, people sit up and take notice. So,
yeah,
good for you.
It'll be good to be a part of it. It's been a while since I've done a play.
Yeah,
it's been like since like this community theater production of God. It was A Raisin in the Sun, and then after that, it was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Who'd you play in Cuckoo's Nest?
The Orderly.
Really?
I just, yeah, because that was
a good play.
It is. That was like 12 years ago.
Wow.
It was 2008.
It's 12. Isn't that wild?
Shit.
New decade, man.
Yeah.
I know.
So that was 12 years ago trying to like figure, I moved from Chicago.
Oh, did you?
And I was trying to figure out to try to form that community again.
Yeah.
And I did that part.
They say you can make a living in Chicago as an actor, but you won't make any money.
Yes.
That's what I heard.
Exactly.
Everybody will work as an actor if you want to.
Right.
But you won't be pocketing it much.
You'll absolutely.
Just be paying your bills and being a journeyman or
and
whatever.
And when you leave, you will know how to act. You'll know how to do your job.
Sure.
And it's like, I trained out there, got my MFA. And then,
I was going to say, yep.
And then just worked. Like as soon as I was working before I graduated.
That's the gig, yeah.
So that's...
Where'd you go to DePaul?
No, I went to Roosevelt.
Oh, that's
Chicago
right.
Chicago College.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
DePaul, I would be around there all the time because that was like, what's the name? Oh, my God. Victory Gardens.
Yeah, yeah.
I would do shows out there.
Sure.
Do you know Scott Stangland?
That name sounds familiar.
Okay.
Sorry, Scott, if you're listening.
He's one of my good buddies.
Oh, cool.
Good buddies from grad school. And
Good buddies. Well, then he's definitely listening.
Yeah. I doubt that he is. He did an episode of The Blacklist.
So, oh, cool.
That
cool.
he was working on this week. But yeah.
Good for him.
So it is one of those places, you know, like where you will learn your craft.
Yep.
You'll know how to do your job. But it's hard. Like it's harder to, it was interesting because I would talk to my parents about it. I said like, oh, it seems like I've gotten more work and more exposure being in New York than I did in Chicago.
That's interesting.
It's kind of weird.
I would think that would be flipped maybe.
I would think so too.
Yeah. I mean, to each their own, like, everybody's got a different thing they got to do, a trajectory.
Sure.
I shouldn't say I hate, but I'm reluctant to use the word journey because I think it's overused.
It's corny, but it works.
But that's
though.
What it is for you. It's your trajectory. It's whatever it is. And so I've noticed people tend to only give advice based on the situations they've been in. So you might be like, oh, you know, best thing I ever did was come to New York. And then, well, what about Chicago? How's the theater out there? It's good, but the best thing I did, you know what I mean? And so I lived in LA. I lived in New York. People ask me, how was it out in LA? For me, it was okay, but New York was better. And so that could taint somebody else's idea of what LA is, and I would never want to do that.
Right.
You know what
I mean? But you can only like just speak from your experience and you can say, this is what happened to me.
Right.
Might not happen to you, but this is where it would happen to me. As long as you don't give advice with like fear, like, and you're saying, like,
I agree with that.
Because I'm afraid of this, you shouldn't do this.
Yes. I'm sure, you know, we've all had that.
Yes.
But like, I've
from
definitely
our parents,
had people do that.
Probably.
That's a good, I don't know if that's a baby boomer thing or like, and then not to blanket statement, but just like the idea of, at least for my parents, it was raised by the Dust Bowl generation, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very much like you have a trade or you just go to work. And honestly, to a degree, that's helped me because when there's times in between acting gigs or whatever, you suit up and you go to work. You do whatever it is you have to do because making a living is the honorable thing to do. And I know people that are like, well, I don't really want to do that because it's not my favorite thing. It's like, well, sometimes going to work is not about what you want to do.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Because
it's one of those things where it's like that I'm trying to do, or that I like hearing other artists say that it's sort of like, you have to have one of our first conversations when I worked with you guys. It was like, oh, what do you do for your survival job? What's your day job?
Yep.
And Chicago was that place where it was understood that you did your 9 to 5. Oh, you worked wherever you did worked.
Yeah.
And if it was not, if it was a non-equity play, even non-equity plays, I'm not equity yet. Right. I will be soon. But you do your job, and at 6 o'clock you're at rehearsal.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
From 6 to 10, you're there and you're working, and that's what it was. Like it was never, there was never a question, because like how else would you make money or try to live in the big city?
I don't know. I feel like the maybe it's just my perception of it lately, but the culture that I think I've noticed is this perception that if you have to supplement your income, then you're not making a living solely as an actor. So that means you're not a working actor. And that's, you know, also we've noticed the rates in what we do fluctuate. So, you know, you can do a new media contract for a Netflix show, which is probably very different now than it was even 2 years ago. But the idea is that if something is a new platform, maybe it doesn't pay the same that it would have normally pay if you were on a network.
Right. And no residuals.
Right. Yeah. So I do see more people supplementing their income and still being like outstanding talent. And,
right.
And we've conditioned ourselves, I think, to believe, or at least the perception is that if you have to do that, then that is an indication of your success.
Yeah, you're not real. You're not.
Yeah, and it's that. I struggle with that. I struggle with hearing it.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
I've been, I mean, I wait tables, I do the bartending, I do all the whole thing. And I remember walking into a catering shift recently. And this guy went, well, I mean, we're here, so we must not be doing something right. And I was like, actually, if you condition yourself to believe that you're a failure every time you walk into this building, then that's what you're going to start to believe about yourself.
Yeah, right.
And maybe that's what you think about yourself, but I would rather you not put that on me.
Yeah, don't put that shit on me.
I've done my homework. I'm in therapy. So, you know what I'm saying? And But I mean, I still fight it, but it's one of those things where I have made a living as an actor before.
Yeah.
And then I can't believe that I'd be failing or that I somehow got worse at what I love the most in the time in between.
Sure.
I would hope, but it sounds like Chicago's got their head screwed on pretty straight about that. And that's much better for the psyche, I would imagine.
Yeah. Cause I've been there. I haven't been back in like 12 years, but like, I just know that that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And it was just like when I was in grad school, and I told my parents that I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay in the city. And they were like, oh, we'll help you out. We'll help you get an apartment, but you have to get a job. And I was like, of course.
Sure.
And so I got two.
Yeah.
I worked part-time at Best Buy, and I was working at a theater. My listeners know this. But we're getting to know each other, whatever. But like, and I did that, and I worked, and it's just what it was.
That's what
and then when school started, I think we had the opportunity to work outside of school, and I understudied for a show.
Yeah.
I worked part-time when I wasn't in class, and you just did what you had to do.
I feel like in no other profession would the idea of supplementing your income be seen as a failure.
Yeah. So and you don't care enough, bro.
Yeah. It's like, well, no, what? Like, why would that even be a conversation? And I know people that have had to supplement their, like people not in this industry, who've had to supplement their income, and no one thinks twice about it.
Right.
I know my parents did when I was
growing up. My parents did too.
I had a side hustle. Yeah. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Maryland,
outside
of D.C. So my dad, both of my parents were laborers, and my dad worked in the warehouse industry. Like, he worked for Sears for a long time. Then he transitioned to, and then he used to work part-time at, like, Drug Fair, which was a drugstore chain. Mm-hmm. I think it's now CVS.
Sure.
At least regionally was and all that. So he had jobs. My mom, she worked in a book bindery and lithograph company.
Oh, wow.
And she was a seamstress.
Yeah.
So she would do work all day, and then on the weekends and at night, she would sew for people. She'd do weddings. And so that's kind of like I saw them work all the time.
Yeah.
So it was just like, well, that's what my parents did, so I'm going to work. And then when it came to the pursuit of the arts, it was just, you had to figure out how you were going to
make it work. And I know. Sometimes I struggle with, I mean, because I've definitely lived check to check. I listen to podcasts, interview famous people, and they're like, when I was down to my last 68 cents, I got that job and got the Tony and whatever. And that's happened to me so many times that I go, well, how many more of these do I put up with before I go, I need a better life or whatever? You know what I mean?
But yeah.
So,
yeah,
but after a while, I really start to go, because I watched my parents work so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go, okay, well, that's what you do. And I don't even have children, man. I'm saying this as a, like, you know. So it makes, and also I've chosen to live in New York City,
right,
or the greater area. So I know that it's a higher cost of living, but it makes me wonder how to negotiate for myself the difference between working for a living,
right,
and going, well, what about my quality of life here? Am I not working smarter? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I still love what I do.
And this is a nice place, too.
Thanks, man. It's sort of a duplex. So there's another group up there. I've got a sublet in the basement. So we have the basement laundry in the building. Can you believe?
That's amazing.
I was working.
I think you've already made it, dude.
I was working a private event at someone's very upscale residence.
Uh-huh.
And they had the whole floor, but on the floor, I guess they had the whole floor on one side of the building, and on the other side was this whole other apartment. And there was laundry in the middle, right by the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a fancy residence
in the city in Manhattan.
Yeah. And I took a picture of their washer dryer because it was coin operated and it was shared with the other apartment. And I sent it to my fiance, and I was like, you know what? They're rich and they have to put coins in that. You know what I mean? And it made me go, I really have to. My dad raised me. He's like, you got a full fridge. You're a rich man. So like, that's how that computed into, maybe I am living check to check, but I'm still swinging. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. I'm the same way, dude. Yeah. Like, it's funny because like, I think my comedy career, I actually ran into, I would say Steve Mazzilli, one of the owners of the Gotham Comedy Club.
Yeah.
You know him?
I know the name, and I know Gotham.
He was basically one of the people that helped give me a career and helped validate me, because there happened to be like this club that I consider to be my home club, Levity Live, in West Nyack, New York, or whatever. And he would book me all the time. And like, he would book me a lot when the club was first starting out. And you do a whole weekend and you get a good amount of money. Mm-hmm. And my parents were like, this is what comedy can get you. Like I was able to do a weekend at that club and get tires.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
For my car. Yeah.
It equates to something actually material. You know, this is what this did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then doing gigs and stuff. And like these two gigs I was telling you about, before we started, is like, I paid some bills with that.
Yeah.
You know, would I have liked to have bought something else or sneakers or the video game? Probably, but I needed to pay my car insurance.
I know exactly what you mean. I recognize like the movie we just did together,
Dirty Sexy Saint, which you are the star of. We'll get to that, but we can still talk about it.
Well, long story short is I had sort of made it. I didn't actually make a vision board necessarily last year, but I was like, you know, Jen and I have been together 11 years, and marriage has become more of a part of the conversation, something that's now important to us.
Yeah.
And I went into this time last year, I went into the year going, I really want to buy her a ring.
Yeah.
And I recognize that this is also sort of the icing on the cake, is that that film allowed me to buy her a ring.
Yeah.
I mean, I still paid bills and things, but I also was like, but then there is the idea that in as much as I talk about living check to check, that there are moments of levity where I was like, oh, well, this allowed this to happen. And I've been with her so long that the lack of ring or perceived commitment, you know, marriage, for lack of a better term, means that we really are in this because we've been together this long without all of that.
Yeah.
So I reckon for me, it became this weird privilege to ask her to marry me even after this amount of time. And the fact that I had to really fight for that and was actively looking, and then this job fell into my lap. We can also talk about how we serendipity, whatever it is that you believe, like certain things happen if you put it out there, and that's within months of going, oh, I don't know if I can swing this anymore. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Cause it's been times where my day job is sort of like, you know, you still, that's not always enough. It's not.
No, man. No.
And you look at your account, it would be times where I'd look at my account like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then I would get a text from Steve like, hey, can you open for this guy this weekend?
Sure.
And I'm like, yes.
Sure.
And it's like, ah.
Yeah. Oh, man, I get that.
Yeah.
I started working some special events with this one company, and, you know, it's usually a private party at a home or a cocktail hour or something, mm-hmm. and he pays really well, but in a time, this is January when this is being recorded,
right,
where it's typically slower, it's not wedding season, so there's times where, like, that'll come up, and it's like, well, it's this rate, so it'll pay a little bit more than normal,
yeah.
And yeah, you have a big sigh of relief. You really yeah. go, oh, wow, you know, you just never know.
Right.
You never
and,
know.
And that's what it's about, man. So is it true that you're from Fairbanks, Alaska?
Fairbanks, Alaska. Okay,
your IMDb is
that's
right.
That's very correct. I sort of keep an eye on that just to make sure that...
What is that like? What was that like growing up there?
You know, it's weird only in hindsight, only because it felt completely normal because I didn't have anything to compare
sure.
it to. We would take trips outside, but like for the majority of the time, it was always, you know, I was used to it being very, very dark in the winter and very, very, very bright nonstop in the summer. And that just was my normal, you know,
that was your line.
Yeah. And so I remember I was outside at Interlochen Arts Camp right before my senior year of high school. And I remember it was in the middle of summer and it got very dark and it was still very hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember freaking out because I had never experienced that before.
Oh, wow.
Darkness and warmth at the same time. It was very surreal.
So is that true, like that Christopher Nolan movie, Insomnia?
Yeah.
Oh, so it is.
It's
that is real.
Pretty accurate. I think Insomnia is based on another film that takes place in like Norway or Denmark or something.
Okay.
And so I could be wrong about that.
They called it Night Mute Alaska.
yeah.
That's not a real place, is
no,
it?
No, I think that's based on, like, it's like an amalgamation of
okay,
places. But
gotcha.
When I saw it, I was like, that's 4,000% accurate. And when you're up there, it doesn't matter how tired you are. If it's 2 in the morning, I mean, it will be my hometown, 2 in the morning in July, and it's looks like that outside. It's bright.
Wow.
And it does start to mess with your body clock because you're like, oh, I'm good. I'm, you know, whereas now, sun will go down at 6 p.m. and you're like, oh, I really could use a nap right now. And so it, for all intents and purposes, felt completely normal. And then, you know, you leave for college and then you start to see how the rest of the world operates. I mean, you're removed sort of geographically, and also it's just some amount of comfort about being up there. And I think maybe that's just home in general, but it just felt very, I almost didn't leave.
What's the industry like there?
It's weird because there's so much arts. There's so much opportunity. The way I explain it is if my town were any smaller, there'd be no opportunities to be had. But if it were any bigger, I wouldn't have gotten those opportunities.
Hmm. Why do you say that?
Well, because there was choir, I danced ballet for 10 years growing up. There was great community theater. I got to play leads in shows I probably wouldn't have gotten if I lived in a bigger town.
So for the listeners, and I'm going to put your picture up. You're a looker, bro.
Thanks.
You're a leading man.
Well,
like
that's very kind. What we could also do is put up a picture of me at the time I'm describing, which is like high school. I was very... this is not unique to like.
Is it like the male version of Rachel Lee Cook and She's All That? Like,
sure,
where she's wearing glasses.
Sure.
And it's like, exactly. Like Rachel Lee Cook's not hot.
I was. Well, no.
Until she takes the glass.
It was truly like. I'll send you a picture.
You grew into your looks.
I really did. And it was also like. That didn't even really happen until college. And we can get more into this too. But like, I didn't really go to the gym or do anything like until I was in college and started losing roles and seeing why I was losing those roles.
Okay.
So I was always like the funny, scrappy comedy guy,
sure,
you know, like the sidekick or whatever. And, which I still think doesn't leave, you know what I mean? Like it stays in
character
you.
Guy.
Yeah.
Like you're better looking than Jude Law, but
well, I'll take
but
that.
Like Jude Law is like a, leading man character
yeah.
guy.
He does a lot of character work. Now.
Knives Out guy. Bond.
Daniel Craig
yeah. was kind of like a his. The first thing I saw him in was Road to Perdition.
Yes, I remember that.
And
both
he was doing,
actually both of those actors. Are
that's
in it.
Very
yeah.
true.
Yeah,
and they were both playing character guys,
which I think is just more interesting anyway. But.
It is, yeah. When they're, but well, see now we're kind of moving on to something else.
That's okay. I don't want to just you know we can.
No, you're making me think of this. Like, what is it like to be? Do people underestimate you because of your
yeah,
looks?
Yeah, I'm. I mean, it's something I was talking to my therapist about. I think I have a big issue with people assuming that I'm not smart.
Yeah.
And I think that stems from being a kid it's weird. It's sort of been exacerbated as I got older. I was on a soap opera for 3 years. And so people, you know, I'd make a little mistake or something would happen. Someone would say something like, well, at least you're pretty, which is really strange. But
was it a man or a woman?
Both. You know what I mean? So, but that's part of it is like, and I know they don't mean it maliciously, like it became this thing of, and that's why I started writing because I wanted to make sure that, let's say I stop getting cast in those parts.
Mm-hmm.
Can I still have something to give, or are you going to take me seriously if I don't? You know, I look at somebody like Billy Zane. I know this is a weird reference, but
no,
really good looking guy, Titanic, you know,
yeah,
movie star looks, and then poor guy lost his hair, you know, and so like, and hair loss is in my family, and so like, I truly thought I was like, will I matter? Will people want to use me? Because like, yes, that puts me in a like more of a character actor look, but will audiences let me do that? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, or will they look at him? Oh, he used to be so good looking. Look at him now. As opposed to what if I was always a character guy? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so those things made me go, I want to be able to matter for my brain. I know it sounds weird, but like, it's very important to me that you see my intelligence first, which is also how I approach the roles I play. I take everything very seriously until you get on set, and then you've done the work, and then you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it started from a chip on my shoulder, which I realize is not the best motivation.
But sometimes Michael Jordan did it. Yeah. He got 1-6 championships.
Yeah.
So,
You're absolutely right. I mean, my little brother and I talk a lot about fear being a motivator.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I kind of realized, yeah, but I don't always want to do good and work hard because I'm
of
scared
fear. Yeah.
Of the outcome. I think it's a positive thing to turn it into that, you know, to say, oh, I'm going to take this fear and make something good out of it. But if that's the constant, you know, my father is like he would have patents on inventions and be a brilliant innovator, but he had trouble following through with certain things. So my little brother and I, you know, I write and produce, my little brother owns his own business, and we kept talking about, well, we got to do this because Dad stopped. And that's no fault of his.
Like,
Dad would like, oh, yeah, I guess I should have done something with that invention or whatever. Mm-hmm. That one day we saw in the market. We're like, Dad, that was your idea. So like,
yeah.
So it gave us a weird hope, but it was born out of fear. I'm really tangenting here, but
no, that's part of it. On the show all the time.
Okay,
that's fine. No, I totally, you saying this, and my listeners again will probably hate me for bringing this up, but I always think about, are you a sports guy at all?
Baseball was my game.
Baseball was your game. Yeah. Like I love baseball too, but like, I don't know if you're ever familiar with like Jerry Rice.
Yeah. I mean, I know the name.
Okay.
Yeah,
he was one of the greatest wide receivers ever. He had this Hall of Fame speech that he did when he got inducted, and he was talking about, he was basically echoing the same things that you're talking about, how he was kind of scared all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why he practiced so much. That's why he worked so hard. And it was almost like he didn't really get to enjoy everything.
That.
Now, I'm sure he had fun, obviously. He's a football player on a great team. But I think for the most, it was something about it that just kind of said, well, did this guy even enjoy all this great thing, all these great things that he was doing, that he worked so hard for?
That's so interesting.
There was some kind of, there was evidence of this emptiness behind what he was saying.
Ah, that's really interesting. I feel for that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have that?
That I enjoy.
Do you feel like you struggle with the?
Oh, do I enjoy this?
Like, there's an enjoyment in the hustle, but is there taking stock of it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think I am enjoying the journey.
Good.
Like the first SAG gig that I got, I cried in the car.
Oh, I
got,
man, like, I feel that.
I got Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, good for you. It was a good one, too.
And I got cut out of
it. Oh, man.
But they had me.
But you got paid.
They did have me back, and it did.
Okay,
I was on an episode that aired, but
good.
That was like, oh, and then getting a part. Like, I've cried a couple times in the car, like, where it was just like.
I've been there.
Where it's just like, okay, this, like, so it's like validation.
Yeah.
Where all this sacrifice was.
It's worth it.
Was worth it.
It's so worth it.
Even you get like one or two lines in something, but it's like, okay, I'm in the game.
Yeah, I'm swinging.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still standing.
And I think Antoine Fisher, and I think about it all the time.
Yeah, I do too. I get emotional just thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, doing stand up, and I'm like, I remember like I hadn't gotten up in about a month, like, and like I went up before New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh God, I'm gonna bomb. I haven't been up. And it was like a packed crowd at New York Comedy Club, and I get up and I was like, oh, okay. And I did well, but it was like, oh, this is, I love doing this.
Yeah, man.
This is what I do. And this is what makes me feel whole.
Yes.
Like it makes me feel like I'm a functional member of society when I'm doing this.
And you're taking stock of, I mean, how lucky are we to realize it as it's happening?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we're on that movie we just did. I think I was, I don't think I was whistling, but I was noticeably happy at like some ungodly hour in the morning. And I've been up since 4:30. This is week two or whatever. And somebody's like, you're awfully chipper this morning. And I was like, because I'm working.
I'm
not only am I working, but like, I'm playing my first lead in a movie. And
really?
Like, yeah. And like, I mean, I've done supporting stuff, but like, I felt ready. Like I came in ready to work, and like it's a privilege. And I would be catering or bartending or something else today, and I get to do the work that I want to do.
Yeah,
and to be fully aware of how blessed I am.
Sure.
Because of that, and that's my job.
Right.
That's the greatest feeling in the world. Having said all that, day two, I was overdrawn because all my bills cleared at once. And so I was like a couple, I don't remember, like 20 or 30 bucks in the hole.
Yeah.
Knowing I was going to get paid, but I was like, it's okay because I'm here.
Yeah. You
know what I mean? I've
done more than that. And I'm just like, we'll get it back.
You'll get it back.
It's nothing but money, feeling, but man. You're like, oh my God.
Well, yeah, especially when everything clears at the same time.
Yeah,
But just knowing, and it's like nobody can take that away. And it's just money, right?
Yeah, it's, you do have to enjoy this journey, because I think a lot of times people in the industry, or when you listen to some of these, I think when you listen to podcasts, it's a little different because people talk about more about the downs, and they talk, you know, you get a little more real because sometimes like, oh, he was living in his car and then he got this job. Then
and you hear more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if it's just the podcast era we're in, but you'll hear more people talk about that. Like more people have been through that than we think.
Right.
And it's interesting to hear people on the other side of it. You know, if you're sitting on Fallon talking about your salad days, it's like, oh, but here you are. So, but like, I've heard people talk about it who are in it.
Yeah.
Like us.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's kind of like you're swimming, you're doing laps, and you kind of look over and you're like, oh, Chris is still in this? All right.
Yeah.
We're still swinging. That's
the thing that I would say about my friend Scott Stanglin, who like we came up together and we're the same age. And to see him, the first time I saw him on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
Well, he was a replacement in Once.
That's legit.
And that was like, oh shit, my buddy's on, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But then he understudied Josh Groban in The Great Comet.
Oh, wow.
And so he went on, he's like, Chris, I'm going on, I got you a ticket at the box office. So I canceled all my plans, went to see him. And then he has this moment, this like a number where he closes out the first act, just fucking tears in my face.
Yeah.
And like,
I saw the show. Yeah,
it's funny. Cause it's funny when I was going into the theater, these two old ladies that were coming, oh, well, Josh Groban's not going to be here. I was like, well, you're going to see somebody that's going to knock your socks off. So I went, and just to see him, I was just like,
it is, isn't that something?
Cause he kept going.
Yeah.
So most of it is, yes, you got to have talent, but a lot of times it's like, you got to keep going.
Yeah. You have the tenacity to do this. And you know,
and it's not easy.
My little niece, I have a few of them, but my littlest one is 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a little early to tell, but I remember knowing I wanted to do this when I was 8. And just the signs that she's exhibiting, what she'll watch in her spare time, the things that she'll do, I'm like, I think she's bitten.
Yeah.
And my mom asked me recently, her grandmother,
mm-hmm.
What should we do for her? And I was like, well, let's see. As my dad would say, let's throw fuel in the fire and let's see if it goes.
Right.
Because this is what I love more than anything. And this is still the hardest thing I've ever had to go after.
Yeah.
And I want it. You know what I mean? And that's not to say I've met people that pick this up later in life and they're suddenly very good at it and they didn't get their training from blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And they didn't have been doing it since they were 8 years old. And then I look at that. It's a weird artistic envy that I'm kind of like, oh, how?
Yeah.
You know, 'cause I'm, you know, everybody's got a different way of looking at things. But I don't know. My niece could be really, and I want her to believe that she can be good at it.
Yeah.
I just want her to want it if that's the thing that she wants.
Right.
And that's the tricky balance is like, you know, you're also eight. Be a little kid. But that's,
yeah,
it's like all I thought about as a child. Like,
it's crazy, dude, because like I went in to read for some streaming thing last week, and it's like, I call places like Ripley Greer Studios, and I call those dream emporiums.
Oh, I like that.
But you see all these people, like, they're singing, and I'm singing my song, and they're rehearsing, and
want you to know that they're
that they're doing something,
so,
and there's little kids that are just so poised and just.
Yeah.
I looked at this one kid come out, just so much like composure. Yeah, you know, I just think if we, you know, we'll see what happens. It's like, fuck. Like, Jesus Christ. This kid's like,
gets me.
He's like so
in. It gets me.
It's just so like, because I was doing it at that age, but I was just doing like plays in junior high.
Right,
and,
I know. Yeah,
but it was just sort of like, you know, having a good time and all that stuff. But
I love
they were
that.
Just so like.
Yeah, I killed it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's just like, all right, you know. Dad, did you forget your where are your AirPods?
Uh-huh.
You know, I was just like, wow.
Yeah, where the kid is more of a parent.
Yeah.
And the mom and dad are like, how'd it go? Is everything okay? Which I get. But it's also like, there's this weird, I wouldn't say imbalance, but a new balance. It's very interesting to watch.
Yeah. I was like, man, I didn't have that.
Well, also the game is changing too. I mean.
That's true.
But there was something, and this goes back to growing up in Alaska, like I loved anything the golden age of Hollywood, and I would sit and watch, and like I think when I was a little kid, all I wanted to do was be an old man. Like that's, I was like, I want to be Jimmy Stewart, I want to be Henry Fonda, like these guys, just because there was something different, it was something comforting and cooling about their presence on screen, and I just loved that.
Okay.
And, you know, cut to the kind of television we're in now, the kind of roles I get to play are the exact antithesis. It's all fire and forward and aggressive. But there's something about finding the thing that gives you the joy. Like, oh, well, I mean, I love what I do, but the business of it sometimes is very stressful. And I don't want to be around those people when I'm, you know, we're at Ripley Greer and everybody's freaking out. Can we all just like, I got to get out of here. I got to go.
That's the thing that it's like, I love it and I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that, that stuff around it where it's like, you don't have to be.
I think
it's
that's
not that
why
serious.
I gravitated to you when we were in this film. Cause I saw, you walked in. I was like, he's just here. He knows, you know, you can tell when people are in there going
really?
Like, maybe if I speak like this, everything will, maybe they'll give me more light. Like you were just like, I saw the choices you were making. I was like, he's got it. I get it.
Dude,
I know
I was
what
just
he's
there,
doing.
I was there for a day.
But like, I know the feeling. You know what
and
I'm
I was,
saying?
I was just like, oh, they because I didn't audition. They called.
Sure.
They said, we saw a thing. I was like, I'll take off work and do.
Might as well.
Do it. Yeah, of course. And it was fun.
Sure.
And it was fun watching you guys because you guys were on your shit. And I think I said on my podcast, I was like, yeah, I was around a lot of hot people all day that actually knew their shit, that were doing their thing. But it's one of those things where it's just like because it's about doing the job.
Yeah.
And it's fun, but it's like, let me make sure that I'm hitting my marks.
Yeah, man.
But sometimes, and at the same time, it's like, you kind of got to remember, oh, this shit is fun too.
Oh, that's a thing. And I feel like you can have fun if you walk in prepared.
Yes.
And I've been in the situation where you don't have enough time to prepare, especially coming from a theater background.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, well, I haven't really done all my blah, blah, blahs. Sometimes they just want you. Sometimes they don't want you to play a character. They just want you to do your thing. And it took me a while to realize that. But I think having it taken away for a while
mm-hmm.
made me realize A, the joy that I have doing it when I do get to do it, and B, that no one can take it away from me unless I give it away.
Right.
I got to walk away from this. You got to drag this out of me to say, no, David, you can't be an actor anymore or whatever. And why wouldn't you? I mean, it's also like, I don't have to be a brain surgeon. I don't have to, like, I love this. And I'm sure brain surgeons love what they do too, but like, there's just so much joy because we are giving someone an escape at the end of the day. And it's, I don't know. It's that important and that unimportant at the same time.
That's the balance. That's the line. Because it's sort of that. I think that's very true. Like that's how I feel about. Because sometimes when you talk about the craft, and it's almost like we feel like we're being like assholes talking about it. But I think it demystifies it in a certain way. But it's sort of like it's serious and it's not that serious.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's like you like I want to be able to. People like when I die and you, I want to get to the level. So that guy was good in that movie, in those movies.
Yeah.
Every time I went to see this person in this, and I went to see it because of this guy, and it made me feel good. I was entertained.
Yeah.
I had a good time. I busted my ass all day at work.
Yeah.
And I would go see this guy's shit.
I totally get that. I totally get that.
And you just want to make that connection. And I think that's why I love stand up. I bet. You know, it's just like it's immediate.
Oh yeah. Stage work is, especially that kind.
Yeah.
Do you ever find when I don't want to imply, but I know there's some days that maybe don't go as well. Some gigs, right? Do you still get some kind of a kick, even if it's not singing?
You know, when you bomb?
Yeah, I didn't want to say bomb.
Well, when you bomb, it's like you have to acknowledge it.
Mm.
Like you have to know that you're going down in flames, and you have to say, "Well, this is like it." Like last week, I was working on this new joke that I had, and I was like, "Ah, this isn't going well." I was like, "You know what? That was for me. That was for me." It's Tuesday night.
That got me though. I don't know why that made me laugh. So
because I said, you know, I was being honest.
Yeah.
Where it's just sort of like you try to break that facade and break that wall down.
Sure.
And I always preface it the way that I do stand up.
It's good.
It's like the way that I do it is just trying to be like me, and it's a heightened version of me.
Sure.
But it's me.
Yeah.
So it's just if I can open up that vulnerability.
Yeah.
Vulnerability. What's in this sippy cup, man?
It's a double water.
It's double. So it's like you just try to be open and say, well, that you guys didn't get that. You didn't like that. So,
boy, man, I salute you. It takes a lot of balls to go unscripted. I mean, I know I know jokes
you have
are
a set.
Are calculated. I know there's an art to it. I love listening to Seinfeld talk about the architecture of a joke. It's one of my favorite things. But, and I also know, like, within the context of, let's say you're doing a scene with somebody and they're about to shoot and you got to fill out the end of it a little. You're going to improv within the context of your characters. I understand that. I respect that. But the art of the stand-up is one of my, I find it so incredibly intimidating. Like, as someone that, I don't know if I could do it.
It's hard, man.
Yeah, I bet.
It's hard, but it's just like, it's just another tool in the tool belt. But at the same time, you're kind of operating on some of the same things that you do. Like, there's a comfort level that I have from doing theater. But
yeah.
But yeah, but it's a
different
thing.
Was it a conscious choice? Like, you're getting your MFA, you're doing...
No, I was afraid to do stand-up for the longest.
Yeah.
I think acting and stand-up, it's like we're... Because Martin Lawrence is from my area, from where I'm from. And I loved him growing up.
Yeah,
and
he's great.
And Will Smith. So it was a kick to see them in Bad Boys, you know, for Life or whatever.
The recent, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was just sort of like, I love those dudes. Martin did stand up, but I saw somebody get booed on Showtime at the Apollo.
Whoa.
And I was like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And then I was 29 and I was here in the New York area and I just wasn't working that much. And I said, well, I always wanted to do stand up. I might as well give it a go.
Might as well try.
Yeah.
And that first time out, did you kill?
I did okay.
You did okay?
I did okay.
Yeah, that it didn't scare you away.
No.
Yeah.
Because like at the open mic level, like I was around some of the people that in the industry that are now like starting to do really well and get specials, and they were like a couple classes ahead of me.
Sure, yeah.
And I was like, I could do this.
Yeah.
You see somebody get up and bomb, it's like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can be better than that guy at least. And bomb. And
I listened to... No, go ahead, sorry.
And I just kept going.
I listened to... Conan O'Brien's podcast,
yeah,
which I love.
Which and one?
The Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
I know. I mean, like, do you remember the episode?
He brings it up every once in a while, but I forget who he was talking to recently. But basically, just how much he leans into a bomb.
Yes,
like he yeah. just loves, it, and it makes him giggle and like laugh.
Right,
and like he's someone that I could watch, even if I'm laughing thinking about it, because he's. If a joke isn't landing, he'll comment on it like you
yes.
do. And that's funny because he's like, oh,
this isn't you know, oh.
give me a blindfold before you shoot me or whatever. Like yeah. He's like, yeah. really, he really doesn't give a shit.
Right.
And he finds that funny. So we find it funny.
And I think that's the thing that like I really liked Conan when I was growing up.
Sure.
And one of the things about him was like that vulnerability, that self-deprecation.
Totally.
And Martin Lawrence did the same thing where even though he was this rock star, like to me, he's like, I think to a certain degree, he was Kevin Hart before Kevin Hart.
I see.
Obviously, yeah. you had like prior Eddie Murphy
yeah.
before.
Oh, yeah.
But like Martin Lawrence was like this rock star comic that was doing TV and film. Yep. Even though he was at this high level, there was still that openness and vulnerability and the flaws that he would say, you know, I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
But, and I'm going to make you laugh because, and now, talk about my insecurities and my bullshit.
You bring up, okay. So when I watch Pryor though, there doesn't seem to be, and maybe I just haven't watched enough, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of self depreciating.
Oh, you don't think so?
So the special I watched recently, I forget what it was called, but he just, I mean, he goes after everybody, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, he's on fire.
Are
and
we?
He's like, he comes out swinging and it's hilarious. But I was like, this guy knows exactly who he is and isn't afraid to point the finger. Right?
Yeah.
And there's power in that. It's like, it's real power. Like, watching, I was like, I've never seen anybody do that on stage except for maybe Don Rickles, who also makes fun of everybody.
Well, he was like, well, Pryor could do, like, I would say most people would say Pryor was the greatest. Mm-hmm. And like, it's like most people's Mount Rushmore is like
yeah.
Pryor, Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say Cosby anymore, but he was.
Yeah, he was.
But some his autobiography, this wasn't his autobiography, that was Pryor Convictions. But the biography that they did recently, they said like he had, someone said he had the ability to like zip open his head.
I see.
And pull his brain out and let you know everything that he was thinking. So yeah, you would get
yeah,
that social,
I see what you mean.
You get
yeah.
that social commentary. But yeah, there's definitely vulnerability.
Yeah, 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 I see what you mean. It's
he talked about it like him burning himself up.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
That yep. If you have Hulu, they have was it like The Last Days of Richard Pryor?
Yep.
It's like on, it came on ABC last week.
I'll take
week.
A look at, I will, because he is an enigma to me. And mm-hmm. I, like I said, I've never seen, the special that I watched, I think it was on Netflix, and I've never seen anyone like guns blazing. Like I was like, wow, I truly didn't know. I've seen him in movies, but I'd never seen his stand-up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That, and I think,
oh, the stand-up is, his movies weren't all,
they didn't show, I mean, like, I think the first thing I ever saw him in, wasn't he like the quote-unquote villain in Superman 3?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And like, it doesn't show, it doesn't give him a chance to do it.
I think maybe I'm 40 next month, and I think you're
birthday.
Like, thanks, you're a couple years younger.
34, yeah.
Yeah, you're a little younger, but we're around the 5 years,
yeah.
6 years. But yeah, he was, oh yeah, he was much more than
his
movies. Yeah, like Sunset Strip and a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like it's one of those things.
I'll take
where
a look. That's great.
Where you have to, you know, you've done it. Like you've done theater and stuff. Like when you, so when you left Alaska, you said like you almost stayed.
Oh yeah.
Why?
I just was such a homebody, and I don't necessarily mean the building. I just mean like, it was comfortable to me. I was very ingrained in my family. Like, not that I'm not anymore, but it was just so comfortable.
Right.
And I knew I could graduate high school. I was dating this girl in high school, and I thought, well, we'll probably get married right away because that's what people
that's
in
what
my
people
hometown
do.
Did. And I could get a job on the news, the local news, which was on the table.
Yeah.
And I remember waking up my senior year of high school and just going, wait a minute, I have to know. Like, can I do that? I think I'll really... And it truly was like the most difficult step to actually go, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to leave. I'm going to get out. And I'm going to go very, very far. I went to school in Cleveland, Ohio.
What school?
Baldwin Wallace College. It's now Baldwin Wallace University. It's gotten bigger. Yeah. And I went for musical theater. And I had to like, there was a part of me that went, what if I wake up and I'm like 50 years old and I never tried? Like, I have to know. And it truly was like the tearing of flesh. Like, I really had to like make the effort to say, I'm going to step away and do this. Cause for me, it wasn't just getting out. It was like, you had to leave my home. You had to really go. You had to leave
you had to fucking
far.
Know, man.
And,
what did your parents, what were your parents? What did they do?
My dad was an electrical contractor and mm-hmm. owned his own business for a long time. And my mom worked for the airlines before she had us and then went back as a flight attendant once we all were kind of out of the nest.
Now, what were they? Were they just like, oh, go ahead, follow your
They were incredibly supportive.
See, that's how mine were.
My dad was
thankfully.
Like, yeah, and there's two schools of thought there. My dad was always said, don't have a plan B or you'll have to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my mom is very practical, and so she'd be like, you know, whenever I'd go, you know, 6 months without a gig or a year without a gig, she'd be like, well, I just can't help but feel that we did you a disservice by not making you go to college for something useful. And I said, you know what, Mom? I got a buddy who is a lawyer, and he's a working actor in television. We've done a lot of projects together, and he's still paying off those loans. Like, it's
yeah.
And he's still slugging it out. So, like, and is having a hard time getting a job as a lawyer because he's also an actor, and they don't want him to lose him at the firm, you know? And he's qualified. Like, he's
right.
great. So it is a catch-22, and there are times where, like, I wish I had something, but then I'm also like, well, you don't know.
Right.
Like, I think I'd be having the same conversation about something else had I decided to.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's helpful and it's a hindrance at the same time. But I also think that's just my perception. I have to decide that this is, and I have, this is the life I'm going to live for a while. And there's a weird piece about that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not articulating it very
that
well.
That makes sense. Do you feel like this chose you or you chose it?
I think it chose me. I don't ever remember a time when I didn't want to do it. And it's not this that I'm hanging on to this weird thing of, well, this is what I've wanted since I was a little kid.
Sure.
Because I've had those times that have been so difficult that I was like, I got to hang this up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't work. This isn't practical. But I keep going back to it. One of the reasons why I say it that way is because there was a time, I guess spring of last year, I hadn't worked in a while and I was just real. I was at the end of my rope. I was like, I'm working three jobs, four actually. And I'm tired all the time. And I thought, okay, so if I were to actually quit, what would I do? I would be still living in New York because my fiance's in a Broadway show at the moment.
What's she on now?
She was in King Kong. So this was last year. It was in the middle of their run. And I was like, so I'd still be here. I'd still be at my jobs. And in my spare time, because this is just how I'm wired, I would naturally think of creative pursuits. I like to write, so I would naturally write scripts and work. That's just like who I am, so it's built mm-hmm. into me. So me quitting, quote unquote, and me doing what I'm doing right now, there's no change.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I thought, well, then you might as well just keep swinging.
Yeah.
And it works. I mean, mm-hmm. and I say that like there's ups and downs. I'm not employed, nor do I have as an actor, and nor do I have a gig tomorrow. But like, there's hope. You know what
right.
I'm saying,
dude? I feel the same way all the time. It's like I think about quitting this podcast all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
What keeps you going?
This talking
really?
To you.
Yeah.
yeah it's a lot of times I do it. I can do it by myself, but then I'll talk to people like you. I talk to my comedian friends and it's just like
this is
doing
why.
This I think it's healthy though.
I do too,
to quit not to quit, but to want to quit.
No, I know what you mean.
You know, really, and it's healthy to quit if you feel like
the question.
Yeah.
I think it's important in what we do. I think it's important in our faith. Like to ask the questions, go, what does this mean to me? Mm-hmm. Faith or lack thereof.
Right, right.
That doesn't mean if you don't believe in something, then you're failing at something. Like, I truly believe that asking those questions is what makes you realize how valuable it is in the first place.
Yes.
Otherwise, what do you have?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think about this a lot. I don't know if you can tell, but
no, dude, I feel the same way. But I think before I started doing stand up, I was here, moved here in 07, started stand up in 09. And I was trying to, in 08, I did those two plays.
Right.
And that was just like trying to just figure something out. Like just trying to.
Where do I fit?
Yeah, where do I fit? And just thinking like hanging out with people that had way more money than I did, disposable income.
Oh, man.
And just, it's just like, I am not going to be a cast member in Entourage, like the real life version.
Sure.
Going to clubs, they had all this money. And I'm just like, this isn't me.
Wow.
And this is, and I was unhappy. Like looking back, I wasn't happy. Just work all day.
Yeah.
Go home, watch ESPN, and then go to sleep and do it all over again.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what good would it be away for me to be away from my family, my parents, and other relatives, and just not do shit?
That's the point. Like my father's ill, and he's moving into the late stages of Alzheimer's.
I'm sorry,
very young. Thank you. But he's 64.
That's young.
And he was always like a champion of like, go to York, do it. And so when he got sick, you know, obviously I'd already been established here. I'd been living here like a decade-ish or about. And so I know that he wouldn't want me to move back to Alaska just to be around, you know, to watch him, you know, because the rest of my family's up there. But I do think in terms like what you said, it's like, if I'm going to be this far away from my family, I want to make this worth it.
Yeah.
And two things happen. One is, oh, well, it's not really working and I'm so upset and look at what a waste of time this has all been. Or I'm going to work harder. I'm going to try harder. And that goes back to the fear motivating again, which I don't want to use all the time, but it definitely, the downside is it definitely puts a timeline in my head that's not real. You know,
right.
I go, well, by this date, I should have this done. That's not the case. But you do take your time seriously, I think, and it does help you push. My fiance's family lives in Ohio. So we'll go back and visit them more often. And whenever we're getting on the plane to come back to New York, she's got tears in her eyes. She's like, it's hard to leave them. And I said, you know, I see that. But sometimes it helps them to see us go because they have to know, look at them. They're going to go do it. They're going to go try the thing that they've set out to do. And it gives them hope as much as it gives us hope. And I think that is important.
And that's true, too. Like, you can't. It's going back to another Hall of Fame speech.
I like this.
I'm a sports guy, but I'm not. Like, fucking sport. But it's like, I think it was Champ Bailey that said, your parents raise you, especially as a man, they raise you to leave the home.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be like 35 or 38, still at home.
No.
I was like, my mom was like, oh, you should come home. It's like, what would you think of me?
Yeah.
If I was there? Like, would, you know... They, you know, you feel like you always have a place at your home, like your parents love you and stuff, but I don't know, dude. Like,
I get that.
You kind of speak into something that I think about a lot. I'm only like 3.5-4 hours away, but it still seems like when I was in Chicago, it was another time zone. But do you ever feel like, you said all your family's in Alaska, do you ever feel like the black sheep?
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of it was, this is an old argument. Part of it is because I voted for Obama.
Okay. Oh, shit. Oh.
I mean, here's the thing. So there's two schools of thought. I don't mean to sidetrack too much, but.
That's fine.
The idea that there was a time where my father and I had a conversation where he's like, well, you wouldn't be thinking this way if you hadn't moved to New York. And I said, no, I think this way, and that's why I moved to New York.
Like, oh, shit.
I like to believe that what is inherent in me, the things that I want to do in this world, and what I chose as a profession naturally predisposes me just to be a certain way because I'm much more animated and a little bit more talky than my brothers. Nothing against that, but like they're both
analytical men, like very like, they both have engineering degrees.
Okay.
So I was drawn to this city, not only because that's where I can do the thing that I want to do, but I think it's just been, if you believe in destiny, I was supposed to be here. Yeah. So it wasn't like I got here and then was like, oh, I guess I need to be swayed a certain way. Like, I'm, but I was raised in a more conservative environment,
right,
which also speaks to why I got out. And that's nothing against, because I salute my parents. I think I have incredible parents. And a lot of that is colored by the idea that my father isn't well. So I'm seeing it and like, thank you for what you did for me.
Of course.
And seeing my mom's true colors taking care of him during that time. And it makes me go, wow, they were really great. Like they really, but we, like me and my brothers were all raised in the same house by the same parents, but we all got different things from that. And so I don't really remember what your question was, but
just feeling like the black sheep of your family, yeah, moving away while the rest of them are, yes, there. Like I kind of feel like that, at least with, no, I do feel like that a lot. Like yeah. I had a,
you have siblings?
No, I'm the only child.
Oh,
and I had my uncle passed away, my mom's brother, youngest brother, and it's like suddenly passed away.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, man. And it was, Christmas was not great.
This last Christmas?
Yeah. So oh, it was like, dude, he died on the 15th.
Oh.
And
it was like a week after I saw you last.
Yeah.
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 And it was not good, but it was good, obviously good seeing family and stuff. And I just think like a lot of my cousins, like whether it be North Carolina or Virginia or Maryland, like they're all like there, like they you know, they went away, but they're still in the same area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm in Jersey and New York City, yeah, and all that stuff. And it's just kind of like, God, I kind of feel guilty. And
the guilt is definitely real.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, my family is, it's like a 10-hour flight, like you have to fly to Seattle and then straight up, like,
yeah.
So, but I think it's no different than you still having to
drive down three and a half, four hours, yeah.
Because the result is we're still not there,
yeah.
And I noticed that. I mean, my nieces and nephews are fantastic, but I know I'm the family member that's not present.
Yeah.
I try to be through text. I, you know, call them and you know, I try to be there, but I'm not. And so I do feel that, and I'm trying to negotiate that with the story I'm telling myself versus the truth, because my family, we're all very tight-knit. We love each other. But I will go a certain amount of time without seeing them. I
mean,
I see my family once a year.
Wow.
If. And it used to be more before my dad got sick, so now I have to fly up. Yeah, so it's complicated, and thank God for therapy, because I'm starting to really figure out, am I putting this pressure on myself?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, and I feel bad for you just in the idea of you feeling like a black sheep without siblings.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, it's almost like there's more focus on you, and I don't know.
Yeah. My parents, I don't think, my mom will try to throw a guilt, she will throw a guilt trip thing. Like, I mean, it was hard leaving.
Oh,
she cried
sure,
when I left.
Sure.
Like, you know, and there's family shit that's, everybody's got their shit, their family stuff.
And but it was like, heightened this Christmas.
Yeah.
With that. Yeah.
And then I, you know, there's been times I'm driving away crying and seeing my uncle that's like in his 80s. And I'm just like, ugh!
Oh, yeah.
And
man,
it's just like, fuck. And then, but it's like, but even my uncle, my dad's brother, like he told me, he's like, he said something like, he's like, he just always rooted for me.
I like that.
There'd be times where like he'd make me take him out to take him somewhere to drive somewhere, and he'd go to the bank and just give me $100.
No way.
And tell me not to tell anybody.
Wow.
I mean, I told my parents, but
yeah.
I mean, like he would, you know, just like he always support, because he knew that I was trying to do something.
Yeah.
So it's,
so I love
kinda,
that.
So that's one of the reasons why you kind of gotta, I feel like I gotta keep going. I just want to see where it ends up.
I do too. And I keep thinking about, it's important to see where it ends up, but it's also important, like we talked about, to take stock of it as it's happening, because there are times where I go, well, what if, not what if this is it, but what if it's happening and I'm missing it. Do you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And I struggle with it because, you know, we want to achieve more. We want to do more.
Right.
Like, was there a pre-Instagram world where we didn't constantly compare ourselves to others? You know what I mean? And so I struggle with both.
But you have to realize, though, you might not be where you want to be, both of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing it.
We are.
We're living our dreams.
We are.
Like, it could be corny as fuck, but we're doing it.
We are doing it. Yeah, like, you're right.
It's just like maybe we weren't at the SAG Awards,
yeah,
you know, last weekend. Not this year.
Not this year.
But we're doing it.
Yeah, we are.
Did you vote for the...
You want to know the truth?
You didn't...
I couldn't pay my dues this year.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So you didn't get the screeners?
Not this year, but I had a friend of mine that loaned me some. So,
yeah,
like, that's part of it. I was like, it was between that or making a payment on something else. And I was like, SAG can wait. No offense, SAG, if you're listening.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's $200 or whatever. I can get it, but... But it's not
pay
important.
It later.
You know what I mean? It's, yeah.
Yeah. No, I,
yeah.
Shit, I understand.
There
dude.
Are other, this only happened to me one other time. And each time I'm always like, actually, it always predates like something good happening. So like each time it's like, okay, well, that'll be a good story.
I didn't mean to bring that up. Like, you know how sometimes the foundation will interview an actor and they'll put it on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they say, oh, what was your first SAG gig? And all that. Like, well, you know, you could just say, hey, there's one time I couldn't pay.
After having a decent job.
Yeah.
A couple jobs this year.
You have to get those. But like, what was my point? What was I talking about?
We're not at the SAG Awards, but we're swinging it.
Yeah. And like you got to realize, like, I had a small part in a Melissa McCarthy movie, like Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Oh, yeah. Wait, I loved that movie.
It was a great movie.
Yeah.
I just played an exterminator.
I got to watch again.
It was, really quick.
Holy shit, dude.
I took my parents to see that movie.
Yeah.
And the look on my mother's face, like, when she saw, she was like, you know, it was like a kid at Christmas.
You did it.
And I was like,
holy shit, dude.
I
have the screener. I got to find it.
Yeah, it's like... I don't know how long it,
but it's a scene with her,
Richard, and it's like that.
It's your scene with Oscar-nominated people,
exactly. Like, so it was just like, would I have liked to have more to do?
Yeah.
But that was one of the first gigs that I booked.
That is so cool.
I was about to get fired,
really,
from my day job,
really,
yes.
And did you get fired?
No,
I've been there. I've been fired.
They said they were like, I did fuck something up. But it wasn't my fault.
Sure.
But it was trying to help some other people and
rush something.
And it was just like,
I see.
And they were like, oh, we're taking, I used to have like compressed work days where I would work like, I'd have Mondays off because I would work like 9.5 hour days. And they're like, they wanted to fire you and blah, blah, blah. And we're going to take away your Mondays. And they were like,
whoa.
Yeah. This was December of 2016.
Uh-huh.
And they said, starting in February, you're going to have to work like every day. And
they just told you that?
Yeah. And then, because it was over the weekend, they decided that shit. And then
that's so weird.
I found out that like that weekend I had an audition, like my manager assistant was like, hey, Chris, you got this audition for a movie. It's with Melissa McCarthy, but it's not a comedy.
Wow.
So it's like, you just a couple of lines. It's not a comedy. Just play it straight.
Play it straight.
And so I knew I had that audition that Monday that they told me, you know, you got to blah, blah, blah. And they said,
these are the greatest stories.
Yeah,
this is it.
They said, so we're going to take February. You have to work full time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if I come in at 6:45, 7 o'clock, what time can I leave? And they said 3 o'clock. And I said, can we just start that now? Because my audition was at 4.
Perfect.
So I could get into the city.
Perfect. Yeah.
And then I went into the audition and like there was people that knew the casting director already.
Yeah.
So they, I don't know if you ever experienced this where people
are
like, oh my God, how are
you?
And they can, and it's cool that they like you and stuff.
I know, but it's then you just sink in your chair.
And I was
like,
"Fuck, I'm not gonna
get
this.
I'm not gonna get this.
This dude brought the casting director flowers. I was like, oh my God. I was like, fuck, man. I'm not getting this shit.
This is so great. Like, that scene alone is great.
Like, yeah, and I was like,
someone brings in like an apple. Like,
yeah, to the, I was like, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
I was like, I learned my lines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I did it, and it's like, okay, good, thanks. And
no way.
Then I found out like a month later, like I booked that Kimmy Schmidt part I cried in the car about. Yeah. And a couple days later, I got the call that I got, Can You Ever Forgive Me? But my manager said, yeah, I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to get nervous. You were close, like you were, you know how you're in, you like in the running, mix. In the mix.
Yeah, yeah.
And they, you know, finalized it. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow, dude.
So that was that thing. And it was so cool that like my dad was just like, all right. And my mom was just like,
respect.
She was like, holy shit.
Oh,
like,
man.
So I have that.
We could do a whole podcast on you working with that director. That's a whole other thing I would want to know.
With Mario Hill.
Yeah.
She was great, man. And we talk about, like, people talk about Greta Gerwig all the time.
Sure.
But it's like, and she's great. I love her.
Yeah.
And
listen to a lot of podcasts with Marielle, though.
She's fucking awesome. Like, she's so cool. She's like a, because her sister, Emily Heller, is a comic.
Mm-hmm.
But she took off right when I moved here. Because I remember seeing her sister tape a Comedy Central special.
No way. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so she's out in San Francisco, but like she's really cool.
Yeah.
Like she was just like just easy to work with. Of course, you know, I was a day player, but
yeah, but
it was still cool. Like that's on the resume.
Yeah, and like a movie like that, I got the sense when I watched it, everyone was picked. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, he'll do. It was like, and I would be saying this without you in the room.
Yeah.
Like when I saw it, I was like, everybody is so specific.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is so specific. Every choice is made.
Yeah.
The set dressing, of course, it's got to be period as well. But like, there were no, and listening to her talk and podcast, like there are no, she knows everything.
She knows what she wants.
She knows exactly what, it's so refreshing to hear. And
she's very meticulous because you could tell that the first Diary of a Teenage Girl was like, based on a graphic novel, so I'm sure she had storyboards and
good aesthetic.
And like with this one, it's like, oh, I get to work with her. So,
oh man,
you know,
how cool is that?
And then
I gotta watch that again.
And then Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Yeah,
it was like, I think most people kind of, I think that movie didn't do as well because I guess they thought it was going to be more about Tom Hanks than it was, like about Mr. Rogers than it was about the journalist. But it was still, like, it was a good, sweet movie.
She knew what she was doing. Yeah. It's listening to her talk about how she pieced that together and watching old episodes of the show with her son.
Mm-hmm.
And she picked the one about death or whatever. And
just
explaining that to her son. And he had a meltdown.
What was that on? I know what you're talking about because I listened to that too.
Was it Awards Chatter with Scott Feinberg? Maybe.
I love that podcast.
I do too. It's
That's fucking great.
I'm always tweeting at Scott.
Does he write back to you?
He sure does, dude. He's a class act.
I think I made him, I think he favorited a tweet or something I said, but like that was like one. I didn't tweet at him.
Well, it's a cool story, and this is just inside.
Yeah.
I was listening to another podcast from the Hollywood Foreign Press Association,
mm-hmm.
and it was Ann Dowd when she was in the mix for Handmaid's Tale and for Leftovers.
Okay.
And she was being interviewed and she was talking about like, I didn't know what to expect from all these award situations, mm-hmm. you know? And she's like, and I was at one of these Golden Globes or something. And she's like, I was looking around just so overwhelmed. And Scott Feinberg grabbed my hand and said, you don't know what to do. I'll show you. Like I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
And he is, as a host and as a journalist, who I would want him to be.
Yeah.
But then when I heard that separate, nobody else knew him that was around in this scenario. And I was just like, yeah. And I tweeted this episode at him. And I was like, dude, you should listen to this. She's paying you a very high compliment. And also, his true colors. Like, and that's really refreshing, especially in Tinseltown. You know,
yeah.
That people are, especially within the industry, are really looking out for each other.
And I don't want to hold too much. I know we got to wrap this up.
You're good
up
right now, dude. Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about like L.A. versus New York and then get into like, then just kind of end it with like Dirty Sexy Saint, like the type of roles. What was it? What was L.A. like for you when you moved? Was it after college?
I moved to here to New York after college.
Okay.
And I was here from 2008 to 2015.
Yeah.
And long story short, for the majority of my 20s, made a living as an actor. I was on a soap and then did a show on NBC.
Which one? Which soap?
I was on One Life to Live for
2009 to 2012.
And would you play? What kind of guy did you
he
play?
Well, he was a bad guy. Got everybody pregnant. And then and then once he found out he was a dad, he was like, oh, I want to be a good man.
And he got killed?
And then I got killed.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Wow, well, so you're good.
It's just what you do. I want to turn my life around.
You know, what's funny is there was a guy, Tuck Watkins would come in and recur on the show because he lived in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And he's staple on the show for 20 years. And he'd come in when I first got on and he was like, oh, I know what they're doing to you. And I had like the slicked hair and like just the bad boy look. And he came in a year later and I was dressed differently and had a different haircut. And he was like,
they're going to kill you.
And he was like, oh, you're a good guy now? And I was like, yeah, how did you know? And he goes, your haircut. Like, he was like, that's what you do. So there's archetypes. But
can you talk briefly about like, the technical things you have to do with regards to like learning lines so much, like what's the turnaround for that? And what's that process like?
We all had these mailboxes there and they'd put scripts. I think the earliest I'd get it would be a week in advance. And then if you got a lot of material, you'd sort of pace it out. You'd be like, well, I have to shoot this on Thursday, so I'm going to wait a little bit, but I'm going to read it. I remember once they forgot to give me an entire monologue the morning of, and they were like, oh, sorry, we can paste it on the back of a chair or something. And I was like, you know, and after a while you get into the muscle of it. And I was like, no, I think I can learn this. And I really worked on it. And I had, I think, at the lunch hour to do it. And it's weird. It is a muscle.
Yeah.
And it does come back to you. Mm-hmm. But when I first got on the show, there was a little bit of a learning curve. And I just remember drilling. And just to the point where I'd come home some nights and I'd either run it with Jen or a roommate or something. And I'd be like, if I don't run this now, I'm going to be screwed tomorrow. And also I need to sleep. Like it's time is of the essence.
Cause I noticed like on set for Dirty Sexy Saint, it was just like, you guys, I don't know what day that was.
You were on your first.
First day. I did one day and I think.
Probably within the first week, I think, because we were on the bar. First,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it just seemed like you guys had an ease. Like you had an ease where you were like, you were working, but he's like, okay, I'm doing my line. It wasn't like, you were just like,
I've learned your shit. I guess I learned the hard way. So I found out I got the job for Dirty Sexy Saint 2 weeks exactly before we started shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, you know, you go to the gym more, you do the things with your diet and all this stuff. But then I also sat down and I just looked at the longer scenes first and I just started running them. And then something I like to do is I like to type out the sides, like the script. So just because it gives me kind of an ownership, sometimes I blow up the font a little bit so that I kind of make it look like how I want to see it in my head. I'm a very visual learner.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like mine. You know, so people who ask me like on set, they'd be like, can I see your script? And I'm like, you can, but it's not going to look at all like what you think it's going to look like. And I found, and it's partly from learning the hard way and partly just because I love what I do. If I take it seriously and I do a lot of prep work, when I get there, it is pure joy. Because there's no, oh God, what's my line? And there were a couple times, like, especially on some of the longer days, I think one time shot 12 pages in a day. I had my blown up script laid out behind the bar. And I occasionally during rehearsal, I would glance at it and like make sure that I could do what I needed to do while still doing all these actions because I was making drinks at the same time.
Yeah.
So like there were some things, but by the time we're rolling, like it's ready to go. And because I'm a big physical learner too. So once I got it in my muscle memory, oh, I'm making a drink here and moving over here.
Right.
Then you're having a blast.
Yeah.
And I've been in the situation where either the writer has changed the lines right before we've started or something where I've been thrown off or maybe just haven't had enough time in front of the camera. And so you're just a little bit more nervous that when something curveball is thrown, you're like, oh, I'm screwed. And it's important just to take a breath and, you know, this is what you do. You
Know
what I mean? So it's a hybrid, but it's taken a little while.
Yeah. Because I noticed like an ease that you have where it's just like, it was just on set. You had an ease. And then seeing the film last month, it was just like, this was really good
because
I didn't know what to expect.
I didn't either.
Because it's definitely like it's definitely like one of those movies that's like it's romantic and it's for the ladies. It's
sort
of passion flicks, but it was like it had a heart to it, and it was funny.
It was funnier than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that. And she it's edited very well for sure, but Tosca's a good director, and she knew like the right questions to ask, and this is so important. She knew what not to say.
You know, sometimes a director will get so excited and they'll get in there and they'll just keep talking and they'll give you the note, but then they'll be like, yeah, and like really make sure. And it's like, no, 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 I got it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ah, now I'm overthinking it because the director's, we talk too much about it.
Yeah.
She would never do that. She would just say like three words and then she'd be like, or, yeah, I had a director come to me, not her, somebody else would come up and be like, how'd that feel? And I go, fuck, yeah. It's not good. Because you're asking me how I felt. Like, how'd that feel?
Yeah.
Good? Okay. Well, I want you to try it this way. I'm like, no, no, no. And you're in your head. So actors are so strange. And just being able to talk to you. And I never got the sense that she was not getting what she wanted. So then I felt more confident. And I also, because I'd never been a lead in a film to that extent, with Jordan, obviously, who's number one on the call sheet, I just wanted to be able, I've seen how someone who is the lead can set the tone.
Yes.
And in an environment where we have to knock out a certain number of scenes a day and make our day, and like, I think we only shot for 15 days an entire feature film, like, and shoot it well, not rush it. You gotta be on your shit. And also you have to have a calmness. And part of what I did was, we had that commute from Union Square. They'd pick us up in a van and they'd drive us out to Jersey. And I would listen to a meditation every morning just to calm myself down and make sure that, like, if I'm feeling a little bit more relaxed, maybe everybody else will too. And I think it does. I hate the phrase trickle down because
no, that's what it's supposed to.
The crew is less than, but we're all trying to make the same movie.
Yeah.
And they've got to do all of these difficult jobs in a very quick amount of time. And they're trying to light a scene that we just discussed. Mm-hmm. And I've had this script for 2 weeks. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, their job is hard and it is difficult to do under pressure. And they do need to yell sometimes and figure, hey, can you hand me the blah, blah, blah. I have a lot of respect.
Of course.
For a crew.
Even more so like doing like, I guess you kind of learn that from being in theater too with the crew and just like, if you can connect with them, I think you're doing your job.
I agree.
And it's going to come out. In the play, it's going to come out in the TV.
Sure.
Because, like, case in point, like, I did a day on New Amsterdam last fall, and Ryan Eggold, who carries the show, fucking super nice.
Wow.
Just super
that's
nice.
So cool to hear.
Cracking jokes in between takes.
Great.
And just, like, really, she's so like, oh, these, you can tell that.
That's so refreshing to
that
hear.
These people, like, that he's. The people, the crew loves him.
Yeah.
And the ladies love him too.
I bet they do.
The people that have seen me on that show, like, oh my God, I saw you on New Amsterdam. I love that guy. I was like, Ryan's like, yeah, okay. Like these middle-aged women that just, oh my God. It's like, wow.
Like,
he's a good looking guy, but it's just like, oh shit, okay. All right.
Sure.
They
well,
love
also
it.
Shows like that can also paint a picture. I mean, the writing and you know.
Because you don't know what people, like at my day job, I don't tell people what I'm in.
Sure, I know what you mean.
So it's like, I saw you in this. I saw.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't really. So you don't know what people watch.
Yeah. I see. And then and then they happen to see you and you didn't even mention it. I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, oh, you could. And
wow.
So
I'm
like, I love that guy. Oh, my God. But okay, and I guess I want to close it out with like just. I guess maybe what we were going on, like you're playing the villain and this like. Is that what they mainly cast you as? And
I mean,
what they were?
Yeah, I was playing a lot of douchebags. And
okay.
Like,
polo shirt with the collar
up.
Yeah,
yeah. And you know what's interesting? And so here's the thing.
Back off, Trent.
Yeah. Okay, Brad.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. You know, it's okay. I see this saying. I'm grateful for the work.
Sure.
And I'll throw myself into it, but. I think it was 2017. I played four guys that wore Lululemon and were either a coach or a physical therapist at a gym.
Okay.
Right? And now they were all on really good shows. And but this is sort of what happened to me is like I was in two episodes of the first season of The Good Fight.
Okay.
And I remember when I got the job for the pilot. It was technically my first pilot that I ever got. And I was really excited. And I was playing opposite Kush Jumbo. Like her sort of boy toy, like the guy that she's sleeping with or whatever.
Yeah.
And so my first scene is this nude scene from the back. And I knew that when I signed up and I knew it was part of it and I was grateful to have the job. But I remember saying to somebody, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be in the pilot of The Good Fight. And they said, oh, really? Like, that's some of the greatest writing on television. You get to play... you get to play a lawyer. a lawyer, like who's the guest star that's gonna be the judge, you know, because like, that's always yeah. And I was like,
I'm not in that scene.
Here's the deal. I'm thrilled to be on the show.
Yeah.
And they had me back.
That's cool.
But when I came back, I was with her and having a scene where I'm talking about the calories in guacamole while I'm eating chips at a restaurant. You know what I mean? Like a little bit of like, why is she with him? To yeah. juxtapose that she should be with the lead of the show. You know what yeah. I'm saying? And I know I'm feeling this place. You know what yeah. I'm saying? And it's also one of the greatest shows on television right now. So like I'm yeah. privileged to be on you're that on show. It. But I'm not. So I was like, you're playing a lawyer. And I was like, no, and I'll just let you figure that
but
out.
But that's
so.
A thing, though, where dudes don't get to talk about that much, right? Mm. Or nobody gives a shit.
Sure. Well, and I've had friends of mine be like, well, it's about time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. because I've had a lot of girlfriends that are, not a lot of girlfriends, I've had friends that are girls that are like,
I know what you mean.
That are yeah. like, oh, well, like, welcome to our world. Like, we've been doing this for a long time. Like, mm-hmm. you're the eye candy or you're this.
Yeah.
Which, I've had other friends roll their eyes and be like, oh, it must be so hard. And I'm like, yeah. well, I mean, I was freaking out about being in shape and like,
right.
the camera's up your ass, you know, you're thinking about a lot of things. And, yeah. you know, I'm it also, it plays into it. I had just like made this promise to myself. It's like, well, my dad's not doing too well. I want to make sure that I only do roles that my family can watch.
Oh,
you know,
man.
My niece is 15. She's like asking, what do you do for a living? You know, you're like, oh, anything I can watch? No. Oh,
no. Well, I mean.
Not yet. But yeah. it's also, and I realize that like, it's not my, I don't pick these parts. It's not my job to make my family go, oh, well. And we had this conversation about Dirty Sexy Saint too. Yeah. It's like, I'm very proud of it. And it's a role I took because I believed in the character and I really yeah. wanted to do it. My mom shouldn't watch that. You know what I mean? Like, there's enough it, yeah. in there. I was like, yeah, the fast forward button handy and this thing.
Yeah.
So it is a privilege to work. I take it very seriously. I have a lot of fun. But I am also aware that I have to work on a stereotype that I'm sure others have had to work on too, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because it's like you don't hear guys talk about it that much. But then at the same time, you're not at the point where you can say, I want this part.
No.
Where it's like, you know, no. where I was listening to, I think it was Michael B. Jordan talk mm-hmm. about, you know, him choosing to do Just Mercy. And yeah. him, that's his one of his first
yes.
that he's producing.
Yes.
And he said, well, you know, when I first started out, I was trying to get work to yeah. see if I could get work. And now that I'm in a position to make choices,
he can make a choice.
I can make a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not there yet.
I listened to a great interview with Ann Dowd, again from Handmaid's mm-hmm. Tale. And she was like, she's like, the integrity of the writing, everything that weighs into you taking a job or not. She's like, there's a time, and she was like, there's a time for her, where I'm going to choose to say no to this, and that means I am choosing to stay at my restaurant.
Right, right.
And I think about that a lot because I go, I'm back here slinging these drinks and everybody's treating me like yeah. shit or whatever. And I go, but it's the integrity. Like, if I love this so much, then if I'm going to take that job, I don't want to be angry the entire time I'm on this
yeah.
set. You know, and there yeah. have been some, and I'm not talking about anything I've ever taken, but there's been some things I'm like, I'm not going in for that because I know if I got it, I'd be mad. Either it's
yeah.
the writing isn't good or, and I mean, it's not that I'm William Shakespeare. It's that, no, I can't. That's not good. Like, it's yeah. not. Somebody's going to take it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and maybe me first moving to the city would feel differently, but I do have some, there's some pride there that I,
of course.
Yeah. I don't know. There's maybe that I'm a little crazy, but, I have to see kernels of something.
And, sure.
And yeah, when I read that script for the movie that we just did, you know, most of the time actors have to kind of write their backstory or kind of figure out. And the best thing about this script was his backstory. He said everything. He was mm-hmm. like, this is what happened to me when I was a little boy or whatever. And I saw an opportunity to give voice to somebody that had been abused. And every single thing in one long 9-minute take could yeah. come out. And I was like, well, that's a play. When am I going to have this opportunity?
Yeah.
You know, so he signed me up. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? And then when somebody comments on Instagram or Twitter and says, as an abuse survivor, it really meant a lot to me that you took this seriously. Wow. I mean, I guess the assumption for some people would be, oh, he's not going to take it seriously. But What an honor. What a privilege.
Because I guess, and then we can close on this because I know we got to wrap this up. It's one of those things where it's like a movie like Dirty Sexy Saint is a romance.
Right.
And it's easy for people to try to be dismissive of it.
Sure, sure.
And so you taking onus, taking the reins, mm-hmm. it means something.
It's important.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the writers of the book, Carly and Erica, were on the set, and just seeing that this was something that they had worked so hard on, and then it became a screenplay, mm-hmm. and then they were producers on the film and had it say in the casting. So, like, they were watching the first week in anticipation, and then I got a text from them saying, we saw the first cut of the film, you guys did great, congratulations. So, it's whenever an actor gets their script or whatever,
yeah.
so many things have already happened.
Right.
And to honor the idea that, you know, I'm like the last piece of the puzzle. They've been in pre-production. Somebody's written this. Somebody's worked on this years before. And as a writer, I get that too. And I also found out that the romance genre as a book is the number one selling genre of books in the world.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that because I didn't know much about what we were getting ourselves into. So the window is much wider than I thought.
Yeah.
And you got to honor that. Also, it's the integrity of your work. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Cause being at the premiere, like I was like, holy shit. Like,
yeah,
it was pretty major.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, wow.
Walking up with my fiance and we were like, is anybody going to be here? I was like, I don't know. I'm assuming some people will be here. Maybe it's just a small screening.
Yeah.
But then you get to the top of the escalator and there's a red carpet and people are very excited.
And that was in I think that was like the RPX theater too.
It was.
That was in a big, that's a huge room.
Huge room.
I was like, oh shit.
My ass has never looked whiter. Whiter and whiter.
Yeah.
I think we forget, you know, actors always when they win awards or whatever, they get up and like, oh, I'm very humbled by this. But the assumption is, I've always wanted to do this. We're lucky if people pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because you're going to do your auditions, you're going to do, and even if you don't get the job, you're still going to do a good job.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee. So we're going to do this whether someone is watching or not.
Right.
Which is part of the reason why I didn't quit. I'm still going to be able, I'm still thinking about it. And anything else is icing on the cake. And that is just such a, maybe it's all this time slugging it out in restaurants and bars and at catering weddings that has made me just, it is such a gift and it brings me such joy that I can't not appreciate it.
That's so true. Cause every time I see an email or see my manager on my caller ID, mm-hmm. like, fuck yeah, let's go. We got a shot.
Yeah.
We got a chance to do something. And so it's, I got a chance to show people what I could do.
It's the best. I mean, we joke, but it makes me emotional. I get very,
It's because you're like, fuck yeah, back in it.
Yeah. I'm still swinging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. David, thanks so much for doing
Chris.
This, man.
This is so cool.
Yeah. Plug the film.
Yeah.
And
Dirty
tell
Sexy
people where
Saint
they can find it.
Now, Dirty Sexy Saint is now on PassionFlix. You can sign up on PassionFlix.com. It's so cheap to sign up. I know it's another streaming platform, but you'd be supporting female storytellers, female filmmakers, writers, directors, editors, composers, women star in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Tosca Musk is a genius, and what she's doing with the company is nobody else is doing.
Because it's like Netflix for romance
and
films.
Jordan and I, who plays the lead in the film, she and I were talking about how beautifully the sex scenes are shot. It's not gratuitous. Yeah. There's just so much. It's very lovely. It's very, it's sweeter than I thought it would be. And I think that's just from the male gaze, I'm thinking, oh, this is what this is going to be. But it's all about consent. There's just no other platform doing that. And I'm not even saying that having worked for them. I truly saw the movie and was like, oh, wow, that's exactly what it is. So.
Yeah.
They're doing big things and they are, speaking of swinging, they're such a young company and they're going nuts. Let's get Tosca on here. That'd be a cool interview.
She would do it. Gotta go to get
you
to LA.
Me, Tosca. Well, she'll probably come back to New York at some point. She likes shooting out here.
And she said she did say she likes shooting.
Good luck getting her though. She's so busy.
Oh yeah.
You never know.
All right, man. Thanks so much for
Chris.
Doing this.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.
You too.